This conference is being recorded.
This is Luke Allen from CriticalBench.com, and I'm here with Dan John. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic today. Thank you.
Give the listeners a little bit of an introduction and a background. They might not be familiar with you. You've been involved with a lot of different types of athletic endeavors over the years.
Well, let's see. I started weightlifting in 1967, which is a year before my wife was born. So, you know, I've been around a while. I was a solid Olympic lifter. I snatched 314, and I cleaned 402, but I missed the jerk behind me. Power lifted with a 628 deadlift. I was a discus thrower and hammer thrower and shot putter in college. I was the MVP. I scored the most points for the team for Utah State, which is a big deal, D1 school. I was an All-American in junior college in the discus and pretty good thrower in high school, played football, wrestled. I do Highland Games. I won the big Pleasanton Games 2 years in a row now. Gosh, I have the American record in the weight pentathlon. That's the shot, discus, hammer, javelin, and 35-pound weight throw combination. I coach full-time at Juan Diego Catholic High School. I'm the weight coach and the head track and field coach, which is interesting because my degrees are in theology. I'm also, I teach full-time online for Columbia College of Missouri, and I teach religious studies. And then I also, I write for Testosterone and Men's Health. And then and I just came out with a book, I mean, literally last week, called Never Let Go. And it's my discussions of life with weightlifting as the prism, you know. So that's I'm married for 21 years, and I've got two daughters. They're pretty interesting kids. Kelly was in a one-week period prom queen and all-state in the discus. And Lindsay is a two-time All-State athlete in the shot and the discus, and she was the homecoming queen not too long ago. So they're a pretty interesting group in my home. So, and my wife is a federal agent, and I don't see her very often in the last decade or so because of certain events. But here we go. Was that good enough?
Absolutely. There's plenty to get into, I think. You've competed in a wide range of sports, as you just mentioned. How do you understand that? Most people are much more into, you know, selecting one sport because they think that's what they should do.
Well, and it's true, and that's absolutely correct. You know, if you want to be the best there is, in fact, I know guys in the Highland Games that only do the sheaf toss, and we all make fun of them because that's about as un-Highland Game-ish as you can do. But if you want to be great at something, you have to just do one thing. And, of course, the old rule of that is specificity works, but at a price. And the price is it's real hard to stay it's hard to stay balanced physically. I've got an enormous right arm. Now we could insert joke if you'd like here. But actually it's from all those years of throwing and being right-handed. But, you know, even though I have tried real hard to balance it off with a lot of different things, my right side I've got pictures of me that just look kind of freakish. It's like the angle is funny, you know, like someone photoshopped it or something. So the downside of that is, you know, I've also got massive right shoulder issues. I mean, I'm fine. And I also have left hip issues because, you know, the body works in an X. So the right shoulder, left hip takes all the pressure on throwing. You know, and so I think that, you know, nature rewards the omnivore, the person who can eat anything. Sport rewards the specialist. And I think I try to teach people that extremes in anything are difficult. The human body loves extremes. Like like right now, if you went out and sprinted 400 meters and you had lactic acid hit you and you felt awful, that would do more for you physiologically than, a three-mile jog. It would just, the body loves to go over the top, but it doesn't, you know. Now, does that mean every single day or every hour in the hour you run 400 meters as fast as you can? No, because that's just crazy. So I think when you look at the way I approach sport is that let's be honest, Highland game throwing and discus throwing have a lot of similarities. The Olympic lifts and discus throwing have a ton of similarities. So a lot of this stuff is, it's the same, like Pavel says, you know, it's the same, but different. It's the same, but a little different. I tell you one thing, Highland games are a lot more fun than the other sports. I mean, anytime you can eat and drink between throws is, you know, my kind of sport. Whereas in discus throwing, I get sick. I train 9 months for six throws. I mean, it's, you know, it's emotionally exhausting. You know, and of course, the Olympic lifts, you don't have much time at all to make that lift, and that bar's coming right back down on you. So, yes, you're right. Specificity is the best thing you can do, but then you also pay a very high price with overuse. So I hope that answers the question.
Certainly. Well, I think it leads into my next question, which is something on specialization versus over-specialization. We seem to have a Western model, maybe Adam Smith versus a Soviet model, their PASM, their process of attaining sports mastery, it's just totally different. Is that something you have any familiarity with?
Well, yeah, and, you know, don't forget, though, you know, like Pavel says so well in his book, Enter the Kettlebell, he says, you know, the Soviets had this thing for mastery, but they had two things. They had the program maximum, which was world domination, and the program minimum. Well, we're not going to lose anything on our borders. We're going to keep it where we are. And, I think when you read Pavel's book, you got this thing called the program minimum. If you only have 12 minutes a day, there's no better way to spend your time than the program minimum. You know, and it's, you know, 2 days a week you do swings and 2 days a week you do get-ups, and that's the whole program. So you're right. I have to agree with what Tommy Kono said in his book. You know, the genius of the American system is we find the most efficient way to get to the top. It's genius. And we have literally, if we have 2,000 discus throwers in the United States, we have 2,000 people tweaking, at least we used to, it's not as much true anymore, tweaking the boundaries. Okay, this guy focuses on this, but I'm going to focus on that. And, of course, that begins to whirl around as everyone's secrets get exposed, and pretty soon you have something far better. I think in the heyday, with the true heyday of bodybuilding, I think when you had guys coming in from four or five radically different philosophies, I think bodybuilding really flourished. Now, of course, it's just, it's so much the insulin and stuff like that. But back in the day, you know, you had guys who were trained on machines. You had guys who came in from a powerlifting background, an Olympic lifting background, sport background. And so what happened was kind of fun is that all these philosophies had a chance to play out on the posing platform. In powerlifting, you know that the West Side guys don't like the way Ed Cohen used to lift. But you know what? Ed Cohen was fabulous. And those guys back in the 70s trained a different way, and you know, they didn't have all the fancy gear. And both meanings of the word gear, but these guys were pulling enormous weights, you know, with T-shirts, you know, not bench shirts, T-shirts. So I think I'm a big fan of letting the market just go. Now, I'm also a head track coach, okay, so I can't allow that to happen too much. So what you need to do is you need to have this, I'm using my hand to explain it. You got to have a program that has a lot of wiggle room. And so, for example, if you want to do a certain sport, I don't know what the sport is that you want to do, I would suggest you look at three or four radically different schools. Like, you want to improve your deadlift. So the Ukrainian guys drag logs for 2 years. These guys never deadlift. That's West Side. They never deadlift, supposedly. These guys here deadlift 5 days a week. So there's three radically different schools. Well, can you glean the truth out of, you know, those three schools? And I think that's the answer. So the answer is in the American system is, I would say, suggest try everything. Of course, though, there's a caveat. Not all at once, all right? Please, not all at once. Try everything in some kind of intelligent form. And then give yourself a little wiggle room, you know. The upside of weightlifting sports is you got this wonderful thing called the max. And if it's not going up, the program ain't working. I don't care how pretty you are. And I always like what Clarence Bass does for, like, bodybuilding. Every September he has a photo shoot. If he doesn't look better, what he did was wrong. And if he looks better, what he did was right. So that's, I think, the answer. I think the answer is that both systems have great value. Don't run away from either one, but at the same time, just, you know, don't go higgly-wiggly after any new fad. You know, put it into your program. And, you know, I talk a lot about that in my articles at T-Nation. You know, do you have a standard program that you can test a new supplement or a new idea? I think everybody should have a basic workout that they do probably up to 3-4 times a year, up to 3 or 4 weeks. It's your program that you do. It's your fallback program. If you take a new supplement, chromium picolinate, don't do it while you're also trying the new West Side squat program. Do it while you do your standard, the workout you trust the most. I have one I call the transformation program. So when I take something like chromium, I take it while I'm doing the transformation program, my basic, standard, boring workout. If at the end of 3 weeks I've put on 73 pounds of lean body mass, I look like Mr. Universe and snatch 1,000 pounds, hey, this stuff works. But if nothing's happened in 3 weeks, it's an indicator that maybe this supplement or this new idea isn't very good. That was a long explanation, but I'm sorry. But
no, yeah. I think that was very good. One of the things that sort of brings up is the idea of open source software development, where basically anyone can contribute to this idea of finding, you know, a new and better product as a synthesis of what's going on with lots of sort of hands involved. And that's what seems to be what you're describing in the throwing community and the powerlifting community, is that
exactly,
you know, people can work together and listen and learn without the
well,
sort of hierarchy.
If you ever go to a football coaches convention, you'll hear everything I just said is absolutely the truth. You know, when you the reason you go to a convention is, you know, there's this offense called the spread offense, and 5 years ago, it scared the hell out of defensive coordinators. Now, these guys all go to conventions, and they sit down, they X and O, and they work things out, and right now, the spread offense is probably, you know, every school in America uses it, but it's probably got 2 more years, and it'll be replaced by something else. Because that open source model of defensive coordinators all scared to lose their jobs has allowed them to work on how to attack that offense. In the throwing arts, you know, what's great about it is I can look at you and say, he's doing something different. And I love the idea of that. Now, there is a whole other approach. It's called the German approach, and I'm a big fan of it, to be honest with you. It's kind of funny because it goes radically against everything I just said. But, you know, they have a model that they believe you should follow. You know, you need to be 6'7", you should be 7% body fat, you should be long levered, you should do 10 of these kind of throws a day, 10 of those, 10 of those, 10 of those. You should play a ball game for 45 minutes, and then you should do these 6 weightlifting exercises. And in 14 years, you should be at this level. If not, you're not good enough, put in the next person. It's a great model. The problem is this. Starting with that 6'7" lean body mass guy. Just don't get that very many of them just falling off the trees around me, you know. And the problem with any kind of what I call the German model is that there's these presuppositions at the beginning that are just they're not real. And I think the open source software is it called Linux? Isn't that the one that? Yeah, you know, it's genius, and it does it. And nobody had to name it. That's what we've been doing in weightlifting at least for the last 110 years, from what I can figure. You try this, I try that, we get together. I like your idea, you like my idea. I think your idea is stupid, and then I steal it. You know, I do think that's a good model. The other thing is you have to be honest, too. You have to have that backup. You know, as I talk to a lot of college strength coaches and stuff, and I'll tell them, hey, we don't do this because of the injuries. And they'll look at me and go, oh, my God, you're right. This exercise causes injuries. Yeah. Now, at the college level, you can get away with, you know, you might be able to, if you lose Johnny, Paul's pretty good. But the high school level, you lose Johnny, ain't no way in hell you're going to win Paul, okay, if that makes any sense. So the open source, there has to be that also that level of honesty. If a program is hurting people, if an exercise, a movement, an idea, you have to be honest enough to say, hey, that was a mistake, man. That was a huge mistake. And very few, I'm willing to do it. God, you just, here, help me pat myself on the back. But a lot of people don't. A lot of people, you know, I read on these forums about these injuries. People blowing out hernias and all these different things, you know, blowing their knees out, doing box jumps and stuff. And I thought, why do you have a 45-year-old guy jumping on boxes? You know, I mean, it's fine. I mean, it's a good thing. But why? So sometimes you also have to be honest on the other side of the open source, of the downside, if things are falling apart. And I think that's a pretty solid response to your question.
Absolutely. Pulling back a little bit, you've talked about a lot already, but what are the sort of things that interest you in the various sports that you described? And would those same things sort of interest you if you found another sport or if someone found a different way to combine throwing events, something like that?
Yeah. You know, the thing that always, you know, has always intrigued me about the discus throw is that, and the hammer throw, actually, is that there's this dance between you and the implement, and that you come in with a bigger engine, and you're taller than I am, and you're stronger than I am. I can beat you, like, by playing throwing the discus like playing the violin. If I'm smoother and more subtle and have a more beautiful flight, I throw farther than you. And that's always something I've enjoyed about the throwing arts, is that there's this bizarre relationship between you and the implement. And so I can go out the first day after training for 6 months and my bench has gone through the roof and I've got the huge clean and not throw nearly as far as I did when I was far weaker but much more delightful in my movements, graceful in my movements. So that's something I like, you know. And you know, if you go to a top-end track and field meet, you know, you just look at the body types and then you look at the efficiency of the athletes. You know, there's no other word than beautiful. You know, sadly, you know, the way we show track and field on television in the United States is just one step from horrific. But, you know, when you go to a track meet and you watch any event, it is amazing how just simply lovely the movements are. And that doesn't come across on television very well. It's like there's certain sports that don't carry well. I think hockey's bad on television. I discovered the other day that lacrosse isn't as good as you think on television. You know, it's kind of hard to follow. And track and field doesn't come off. But in a real meet, it's amazing to watch. So I think that'd be it. I mean, the reason I like the throwing sports is the beauty and, of course, that relationship with the implement. You probably don't hear that very often, but that's the truth.
I think the reason I hear most often for wanting to get involved with Highland Games is people want to flip the caver. You know, that's just interesting and sort of beyond, you know, what you would find in most other situations. So I can see the attraction to that, sure. I've been reading you on T-Nation, Testosterone Nation, for several years, and one of the things that came across to me is you have a very straightforward writing style when most people just don't come off like that. Talk a bit about that and how people have responded to your style.
Well, it's interesting because most people really like my articles. I get a lot of positive feedback. You know, I tend to cut to the chase a lot. Like this last article I wrote for them, you know, there's this thing called general training, okay? You call it whatever you want, general physical preparation, whatever. And the problem with that is that they read these ancient texts. I mean, I'm 52, and I'm old enough to have been alive when people tried this training program. But if you were born after 64, no one does it anymore. That's how it's archaic. It's not been used. But people they fall in love with these Soviet terms, these German terms, you know. And the funny thing is, they never translate well because they're using translators to translate the documents, not athletes or coaches. But GPP is supposed to train qualities. Well, there's only two qualities that most people want, at least at T-Nation, and that's fat loss and hypertrophy. Well, fat loss, you know, is done much easier with a strict diet. Generally, you know, something that's, you know, low carbish and, you know, fairly strict. You got to count it. It does help to take some kind of fat burner, and it really helps to be a 400 meter runner. I tell you that. Go to a high school track meet, look at the 400 meter runners, Chuck. None of them are fat. And then hypertrophy just seems to be, well, one, God blessed you and gave you the genetics to get it. You know, some people's genetics are so bad, they'll never get good. But, and then, of course, it's that, well, you know, like in the kettlebell community, there's these guys doing these long, like they'll do a double kettlebell clean, a double kettlebell press, a double kettlebell front squat, and they just keep doing that, you know, for up to 2 minutes, which is just really hard to do. And the idea is that the more time your body is loaded, the more, you know, hypertrophy you get. Well, I just finished it for most people. You need to eat more protein, you need to eat less carbs, you need to eat less calories, and then when you get in the weight room, you got to do something that kind of makes you sick to your stomach. Well, no one wants to hear that.
That's hard. That's hard.
Yeah, you want to stand on the treadmill, and you want to do all this malarkey and all these timed curls, and you know the thing is, I mean, if you can't strict curl 155, why are you doing any curl variation? You're simply not strong enough to get anything out of a concentration curl. You know, if you can't bench, you know, as an adult, I mean, I'm to the point where, I mean, I got to be careful because, you know, for years I thought if you couldn't bench 300, there was something physiologically wrong with you. Now I realize that, okay, God gave me a lot of fast twitch, you know, and I think you can almost hear it in my voice. I mean, I'm that guy, you know. And so, you know, I've kind of really backed off that. I'm down to, you know, you should be able to do a body weight bench press. That's a huge drop from what I used to believe, you know. But if you're not strong enough to do these basic stuff, there's no need to do anything advanced, anything. That even includes, you know, multi-grip pull-ups. No, you don't need any of that. You need to just get stronger. And that's where I get criticized probably the most. You know, I get emails from somebody that says they're an advanced trainer. I've been training 6 months. I didn't think I was advanced until I'd lifted 8, 9, 10, 12 years. You know, of course, the upside was, you know, I'd go to a weightlifting meet. One time, a guy named Bruce Wilhelm snatched 407 pounds. I followed him as the first lifter in the clean and jerk, and I opened at 319 pounds. And I remember Dick Notmeyer kind of patting me on the head and telling me, actually, you're pretty good, Danny. It's like, yeah, right, come on. I know I'm okay, but I'm not, you know, right. It was right in my face. You know, I knew right there, you know, I knew there was, for me to be good as a weightlifter, there was a chasm to cross. One of the things I tell people in some of my articles is, you know, get out of your local gym with all your buddies. Go to a metropolitan area. Go to a serious bodybuilding gym. You know, not one of those bizarre, you know, meat markets. Or go to Southern California. You know, to be the worst bodybuilder at some of the gyms in Southern California, you'd be the best in your state. And when I was young, I had a chance to go to the original Golds and World when it first opened up, when it was upstairs. And, you know, there was, gosh, Robbie Robinson. Arnold Schwarzenegger came by to drop by. He just threw some poop at people. And then Lou Ferrigno, Danny Padilla, all these guys were training. And it gave me a vision of what a real bodybuilder should look like. And it wasn't anything like the guys that I had in my, when I was in college working out in the PE building doing three sets of 15 in the curl with, you know, 55 pounds. They didn't look like they were from the same species, maybe the same genus, I think. But, yeah, so it's the straightforward stuff is important. And I try to be as honest as I can because, you know, I mean, I train between 400 and 1,000 athletes a year. If you throw in all the camps and stuff like that I do and all the daily work I do. And so I get a real vision of, you know, what hard work is and what genetic superstar is. You know, I've worked some kids at discus camp. I mean, they show up as sophomores in high school, 6'5", 240, and haven't lifted weights yet. And they're faster and stronger than kids who do. And it's like, okay, this kid's just better than you and me. You know, I worked with John Godina when he was just getting out of high school at the Olympic Training Center. I wouldn't work with him. We were at the same clinic together. And he was flat out just better than us adults in many of the if he had to do something for the first time, he was better than us. He was a high school senior. So I try to be as honest as I can. And let's be honest, you know, especially in the field of bodybuilding, I mean, if you're born for certain, well, and maybe that's not true anymore, but there's a certain kind of person that just grows better. I had a friend in high school named Barry who had huge guns, and he just, God gave him biceps, triceps, and he had it going on. You know, that's just, so I hate to throw the genetic thing in, and let me back up a little bit. When I start talking genetics, everyone blames mom and dad. Now, it is true. It is their fault, I hope. But at the same time, you can't blame it so much that you never find out what your potential is. I graduated from high school 162 pounds. You know, I was the youngest kid in the class, and, you know, 4 months later, I weighed 202, you know, working with Dick Knottmeyer and squatting 5 days a week. Well, no one wanted to recruit me because they all thought I was too small, and then a couple of years later, I'm just spanking their athletes because I'm, you know. So you have to be careful about genetics. You know, we always say in coaching, can I swear on this?
Absolutely.
Genetics is, pardon me, potential is a French word for can't do shit. Because whenever someone starts talking about potential, you know you're not working with anybody. I've never heard the word potential used in a positive way in my life. You know, when that coach says to me, yeah, kid got the potential, I just look at him like, how many years have been coaching? 4, I know. I've been coaching 30. Once you use the word potential more than a few times in your career, it just gags your throat. It just chokes you down a little bit. So, yeah, I think people like my articles. I will tell you one other thing that people like. I have a lot of stories in my articles. You know, I tend to, you know, sometimes funny and sometimes, you know, whatever. But I do try to let people know kind of the setting of where my little rant is about to come from.
Absolutely. One of the things I think this sort of goes towards establishing is, you know, some people think they're working hard when they're not really working hard. And then the people that have been working hard for a while are maybe the ones that most need to focus on sort of mental training or sort of developing other psychological aspects. Does that make sense at all?
If I had my druthers, I would take a team of former high school wrestlers to do anything because they've been there, you know, and maybe not, you know, the first year a kid wrestles, they're just trying to survive and practice. The second year, they suddenly realize about halfway through, it's not as bad as I remember. And the third year, they kind of giggle because they know that they're going to survive the day and they'll be fine. It's like football double sessions, you know. You always think as an athlete that coach is getting easier on you every year. They're not. You're just getting mentally tougher. So what you need to do, in a sense, is you need to find something in your life that pushes you to the top. I'll tell you one thing that really made a difference in my life. This is a long time ago now, but we had a newborn at the time, so I'll tell you how long ago that was. Lindsay got this pretty serious lung disease where we had to put her on this mask for every 2 hours, I think, for 15 minutes for 2 weeks. And then at the same time, my other daughter, Kelly, developed also this terrible cough, that just this hacking cough. So Tiff and I did not sleep for 2 weeks, okay? And it all turned out fine, but the point is, we didn't sleep for 2 weeks. I never missed a minute of work. I coached every day. I did all my other jobs. The kids got 3 meals a day. We looked like hell. But at the end of those 2 weeks, things all of a sudden, both girls, you know, little kids, they're fine, you know, yay, let's play. They go to bed that night. We pass out, sleep 8 hours, and the next day I wake up and realize, what a pansy I've been most of my life. What a pansy. You know, God, you have not. I used to not be in college if I didn't get 8 hours. Oh my God, I need to take a nap this afternoon. I only got 7.5 hours of sleep. I mean, I looked at my life like a big pansy. Now, this is after being, you know, a Division I athlete. And I think what has to happen in life sometimes is you have to push yourself, get pushed, either by life or a drill sergeant or something like that, and really discover inside you how much more you can do than you think you could do. And, you know, I've taken on a lot of challenges in my life. Sometimes just to simply see, can I do it? Can I do this thing? You know, and I failed on a lot of them. Famously, I was trying to squat 300 pounds for 61 reps one time, and I failed miserably on that bet. Miserably. I came close, but not nearly as close as I should have. But, you know, I've tried a lot of other things, and, yeah, some of the stuff I've done, but you have to try to do something that really stretches you out. And that's why you got to get out of your little friendly gym. You know, if you tell me I'm a bodybuilder, I get this all the time online. Yeah, I'm a bodybuilder. Well, what have you competed in? Well, I don't compete. Well, then you're not a bodybuilder. You're not a bodybuilder. You are a guy who likes to go to the gym just like the girl on the cover of Vogue, and you might as well wear, you know, put makeup on. I don't got a problem with it. If you're trying to look better, I am cool with that. I understand why. But you are not a bodybuilder until you walk on the stage in that damn singlet and stand there. I respect that, man. That is tough. But please, you know, when guys tell me the body, if you tell me I just want to look good naked, my backup thought is, well, have you ever talked to a girl, or why do you want to be looking naked? Well, see now you got me on a rant. Did you see how you did that to me? I blame you.
Apologize.
I blame you. But okay, we'll stop there. You're right. You got to find a way to get hard work. There you go. I'll stop. There you go.
I remember at one point I had read an article of yours that really resonated with me, and it talked about sort of the importance of willpower as, you know, a finite sort of resource. And you can use it however you want, but you need to think about it before you use it all up and don't have any more. Talk about that.
Oh, absolutely. I am shocked. I'm out of school right now, so I've got the day off. So I got up. You know, I ate 3 chicken breasts for breakfast because I grilled a whole bunch of extra chicken last night. Now, I could have had some food that wasn't good for me, but the chicken breasts were sitting there and they looked good. They were all, you know, barbecued. And they were great. So I started my day with 3 chicken breasts. By the way, that was like 6 hours ago. I'm still not hungry. That is a perfect example of a free will day. How much decision-making process did I do to pop open that little baggie and eat those 3 chicken breasts? How much did I weigh? None. So by simply taking the time last night to bag up some chicken breasts, I started my day with a fairly good meal from the strength and the strength world, right? Well, now as I go through the day, I've also got some other barbecued foods in there waiting for me, and I'm very excited about it. And so when I finally get to my workout, I'm doing some stuff. I'm organizing the articles I've written in the last few years so I can have them all in one place, because they're just all over the place. So when I decide to work out today, I have not yet. The biggest decision I've made all day was deciding to, you know, have this interview with you. That's the only 10-second thought I've had all day. And so here I am, you know, I'm throwing some stuff in the garbage, but I'm not making bad food decisions because I have those darn chicken breasts. And I'm going to keep making good food decisions all day long because I cooked extra food last night. So I believe that you only have so much free will. Now, if the first thing that greets me in the morning is my daughter saying the car is broken, I can't get going. Will you drive me to volleyball practice? Okay, let's switch this day around. So she freaks me out at 6:30 in the morning. Okay, I get in the car, I drive there, you know, I haven't brushed my teeth. And, by the time I get home, I'm starving, and there's that box of chocolate donuts that we had. And it's 7 o'clock, and I've got to go fix this car. I've got to get it ready. I've got to, and then I zip over. My other daughter complains, where you been? I need you to drive. Okay, and then I go over and pick that car, and I drive the car, and I get a friend to, and then I was, and am I eating those donuts? Oh, yeah, I'm eating donuts. Because all of those little things have etched away any willpower I have. And people don't agree with me on this, but I can tell you the people who don't live with their moms. No offense. But if you live in the basement of your mom's house, and she wakes you up in the morning, she makes you breakfast, your lunch, and your dinner, pats you on the head, and gives you a little snack before you go to the gym, you have a different life than I have. I've got to be proactive. I got to pre-plan things. I have to be, I have to think ahead on things. And when I do it, I compete at a high level, I keep my body fat down, and good things happen. So, yeah, I stand by that free will article. I think it's the single most important article I've ever written. It's the first chapter of my new book, and I it's funny because the insight came from when I used to do prison ministry. You know, these guys, people say, well, these guys all buff. And I said, no, I mean, it's, you know, prison population, it's a huge sweep. But the guys that do train look pretty good in it. And I figured out why. Some of those guys do nothing but, well, burpees for up to 2 hours a day. Well, next time you have nothing to do, do burpees for 2 hours. And I guarantee you this, your your life will be different after 2 hours of burpees, because, I don't know, but that's what they do, because they have nothing else to do. So that's kind of the that's the sense of that article. That's the sense of this belief. And that's why one of the things, in fact, I'm leaving in, I think it's 12 days now, Discus Camp. I go to Discus Camp 2 weeks every year. Somebody cooks my food. My biggest hassle of the week is doing my underwear and socks laundry, because everything else is done for me. At the end of those 2 weeks, I come out healthier, tanner, fitter. I throw the discus farther. I'm happier. I have a big smile on my face. I have great stories because I haven't done anything. I don't vacuum. I don't dust. I don't make my bed. I just roll myself up on a sheet every night. It's hilarious. But I hope that gives you some insights. And one of the things you need to do is I can't remember the guy. David Allen wrote a book, and it's about organization. But if you're a normal guy and you struggle, a normal guy or girl, and you struggle with this kind of stuff, if you can organize and be a little bit more proactive, you can really turn things around in your life. You know, I'm a big fan of Anthony Robbins, too. And, you know, he really pushes, you know, some other ideas, you know. But I know this, there is nothing more important than being proactive. You know, always grill extra. Always cook extra. You know, I've got a friend, Josh Hillis, who recommends that on Sunday and Wednesday, your workout is cooking, cutting vegetables, and making baggies for the next 2 days. His belief is that that time is better spent, that hour or two is far long-term more important for your health and the way you're going to look than going to the gym one more time. So you make good food selections for the next two or three days. Was that too long-winded?
Not at all.
Okay.
Transitioning from the idea of discus camp, what is your sort of interest or motivation for working with younger athletes?
Oh, I don't know. Honest to God, it's deeper than you probably want to hear, but honestly, when I was young, I had kind of a speech impediment. You'll hear it sometimes when I talk. I had a enormous tongue, and, you know, there's some other issues, and I stuttered, and, you know, I had to go to these little stupid things in this trailer, and I hated it. You know, I had to talk to this lady, and I hated it. And I didn't talk much. And then when I was in the ninth grade, I'm a Catholic, so I got confirmed, and there's this thing, you get a gift, and I honestly think I got the gift of teaching. With all my heart and soul. Many of my family members cannot believe I make a living talking and doing the things I do. And I cannot help myself. It comes up from the very roots of my being. I can't help myself but coach you. Even if I'm your competitor, I will help you. You know, you'll be with me to track me. You'll have me by 4 inches, and I'll tell you to move your right foot faster because you'll throw farther. It comes right out of me. I can't help myself. So I just think it's just part of who I am. I mean, I don't recommend it. I mean, ask my wife. I hate coaching. I mean, my friend Jim Marcosian unpacked my whole problem the other day. He says, no matter what happens, you always expect perfection. And he says, that's not a good way to go through life. And I thought, well, yeah, I know, but it's a good way to keep constant and never-ending improvement. You know, I worry about my athletes. My athletes don't realize something that I realize, is that when they graduate from high school, you know, 59 out of 60 of them will never compete again. One of them will go off to college and compete a few years, but, you know, most of them are done. And, you know, next thing you know, next time I see them, I'm like, hey, what are you doing with yourself? Well, I'm in the rec league flag football team. And it's like, are you kidding me? You went from all-state in football to rec league wide receiver? Yeah, well, I couldn't make it at this college or that college. I was like, oh, man. Jeez, man. So it's just my nature. You know, it's like, why does the shark eat the seal? Because that's what a shark does. And why does Dan John coach? Well, that's what Dan John does. I don't necessarily like coaching. I'd much rather be the actor instead of the director, so to speak. But that's just who I am, you know. I think anybody who's successful in teaching or in coaching literally can't help themselves. I guess you can in football, go into it for the money, but I don't. Even if you made the millions like Urban Meyer does, I don't know if it's worth it. I hope that answers it. But that's the only way I can answer it.
For sure. I think that'll probably resonate with people. I guess maybe getting into some more of the nuts and bolts, what does an average day look like as you're working with athletes? And what is the process of sort of building athletic foundation and then moving athletes through their 4 years? What does that look
sure.
like?
Sure. Be sure you remind me of that second part before I go on.
Sure.
I teach 3 1.5-hour weight classes every day. And then after school, I keep the weight room open. And then during track season, of course, I go right out. And we've got stuff to do. But I try to spend quality time on looking up articles and doing stuff on the internet, reading books. One of the things that always amazes me when I work with a young somebody who wants to be a strength coach is how unread they are. It just shocks me. I'll say, do you know any? Have you read this? Have you read that? No, I want to be strength coach. So what did you do? Well, I hung around the weight room. Well, at best, if you hung around the weight room, you'll get one, maybe two opinions. You know, I think as a strength coach, you really need to read a lot. In the last 3 weeks, I've probably written reviews or forewords to three new DVDs and 3 new books. So that's not untypical for me to read a new book and a new DVD at least once a week. I mean, I'm not saying you need to do that or the listeners, but that's what I think. Those of us in the field need to do. Pavel's new Return of the Kettlebell book and DVD. I mean, they're fabulous. It's just, oh my God, where was it 10 years ago? When, you know, there's a new Get Up DVD called Calisthenos from Brett and Mark Chang and Greg Cook. It's like, oh, okay, I thought it was a doofy exercise. Now I think, oh, everybody in the world needs to do Turkish Get Ups. It's the answer to all questions. Kenneth Jay has that new book on VO2 max. It's like, what, you know, so you find me 3 days a week in my backyard doing, you know, 15-second snatch and then rest 15-second snatch. With the other hand, rest 15. You know, and I love this stuff, and I read and I eat this stuff up. So, and then I also spend some quality time on the forums because, you know, I also think it's funny. I mean, some of the trash talking just cracks me up, especially when you meet some of these people. My friend Dan Fouts said not long ago, I was giving a talk at I won't tell you which one because otherwise people would feel bad. I was giving a talk at one of these large gatherings, and he said, never have so many people been in a room to talk about weightlifting with so few of them looking like they've ever touched the weight. I thought that was one of the funniest lines I've ever heard in my life. But, you know, I really think you need to spend time on the forums. You know, it also gives you insight. You know, I wear the Vibram five-finger shoes, and I got that from a forum, and it's done marvels for my heels. I mean, pardon me, my heel and my hip, just taking care of your business. So you pick up little gems like that. Then, of course, you know, like my brother Gary turned me on to that Alcar stuff, A-L-C-A-R, and that stuff. So you really got to keep your ears open. And you asked a really good second question there. How do you develop a kid? It's my sense, that especially with the young athlete, is that you have to have this kind of broad general strength, okay? We do a lot of things. Of course, we do thick bars, chains, pull-ups. We do hurdle walkovers. We do tumbling every day. We do cleans. We do snatches. We do bench press. We do front squats, you know, overhead squats. All kinds of kettlebell movements. We do all kinds of things. And that's all important, the exposure to all those different means. Okay? But at the same time, as a measurement, I like measurements that are somewhat like this. We have a thing at school called the Big Blue Club, okay? And you have to, if I screw up the numbers, just forgive me, okay? So to get in the Big Blue Club, you have the power clean 205, front squat 205, Back squat 255. Again, that's not very much. Clean and jerk 165. Do a strict standing press with 115. Do 5 one-arm presses right, one-arm presses left, I think with a 32. I think I'm right on that. Deadlift 315. I'm probably missing another one. But there's like 7 lifts. What was interesting is this year we're the small school in our division in 3A, but we won the state championships and went 14-0. Now, it was interesting because we had a ton of kids on this year's football team on the Big Blue Club. And the secret to success in the team sports is two things. The first one is called shrink the gap. And what you need in a football team is you don't need a kid. I mean, we do. We have a kid who power cleans 300 for a double. Now, next time you think you're strong, there's a high school kid who cleans 300 for 2. That's pretty impressive. So you've got that kid. He's on one. We have a sophomore this year, bench 385. And that's pretty impressive stuff, okay? We got a bunch of kids pulling 5. Those kids are here. But then what you got to do is, okay, what is your top 10, top 20% of your team strength levels? Then you got to look at the bottom end. And what your goal is to shrink. If of your 22, 25 starters, you can't have, like for example, you can't have a starter who benches 135 and a starter who benches 385. That gap is too big. So the job of the strength coach in a team sport is to shrink the gap. Shrink the gap. And so what you need is you need something like a Big Blue Club, Big Silver Club, whatever you want to do, and we'll come up with a couple more next year for the younger kids, is you need to have, you want as many kids as you can to be strong-ish over those 7 different movements. And you might say, well, a 255 squat's not much, and a 315 deadlift isn't much. Yeah, but that's okay. Those are fine. They're fine. That 165 clean and jerk, yeah, that's a little more difficult maybe, but these are all okay, solid, fine lifts. The athlete needs to do all 7 of those in one day. So what happens is whatever their weak movement is the one that they have to work on. So you automatically build up their weaknesses by having a club like that. And then on the individual athlete, there's no question in my mind, and I think this is the thing a strength coach should, you know, tattoo on their forehead, attention to detail. And I tell you one thing, I know I'm not popular with the kids and a lot of the kids because, like, I think you should wear a uniform shirt and uniform shorts into the training facility. Why? I don't know. Because that's a detail. And attention to detail is what makes you great. I've worked with, you know, a person who's missed the Olympics twice now because they foul in training. And when it comes to all the pressure of the Olympic trials, they hold back a little bit not to foul and have just missed making the trials, the finals twice. Well, my God, don't foul in training. It's a detail. When I work with you, if I'm working with you as an individual athlete or whatever your goals are, you know, when I tell you to do a plank and you have your butt in the air, that detail is what I focus on. Why? Because it's detail. When you're doing a swing with the kettlebell and you're not, locking your thighs out at the top and turning yourself into a plank, if you don't do that, why are you still planking? You're not doing them right. And then what happens is if you focus enough on the details, pretty soon the whole system really expands. And what you have is you have that elite athlete. Elite athletes, at the elite level, there's no wiggle room. And you've got to be good at everything. I mean, you have to be at the top end of everything. And you can't suddenly make it up with these dysfunctions that you've been ignoring for 5 years. That's one thing I really like about, like, a guy like Brett Jones, is that, you know, he says, you know, you don't want to build strength on dysfunction. Well, that's a pretty good thing to think about. You know, if you've got an athlete who's weak here and you're making them stronger and stronger and stronger, that weak link in the chain is going to be their downfall. So that's I just gave you, by the way, I think all your listeners should send me $1,500. That was pretty good. That was that general thing was a pretty good idea. And that's exactly how you make it a program. It is hard. You know, it is hard to explain at first. You know, why are we spending so much time with this small freshman boy teaching him how to do shoulder rolls when he should be getting his body weight up? Well, because the shoulder roll is going to prevent him from getting an injury one day, or maybe somebody not injured. And that is that little detail that I don't want to lose this scholarship kid to a bad fall when we can spend 20 minutes fixing that issue. So that's my approach. I hope I answered it with some clarity.
Very much so. That was generous and definitely insightful. Just to wrap up, I think we're about running out of time. If people are interested in getting the book, how do they find the book? If they're interested in sort of keeping track of what you're writing or what you're doing, where can they find you?
Two things. The best place to go now, at least for the until I kind of catch back up on everything, is DaveDraper.com. Dave Draper was a famous bodybuilder back in the 60s, and he hosts a question and answer area for me on his website. And then you can buy the book directly from there, Never Let Go, directly off the website. Everyone, a lot of people are going to Amazon and Barnes & Noble, but they don't have the book, and they're not going to have it for a long time. I'm not trying to drive business away from them, but if you want the book, you go to DaveDraper.com, and that's DaveDraper.com. And you just look around. It'll be really easy to find. And then, of course, my home site is danjohn.org, O-R-G. It's I've got a free book on Olympic lifting there, a free book on discus throwing, a book on how to grow up as an adult. And then I've got this newsletter called Get Up, which if you print off all the Get Ups, you will go through two reams of paper at least. There is more information about more stuff than you'll ever think of in your life. It's overwhelmingly too much information, okay? And then there's some archives of some stuff I have from here and there. About a year ago at this time, my site crashed when this, well, it's a long story, but I lost a lot of good stuff. But it's, you can, for straight up questions and answers, just go to Dave Draper's forum. But if you want a whole bunch of background, it's all free. Everything's free. I don't charge anything for my website or Dave. Ask me all you want. I'm here to help you make a difference. But go ahead, download the weightlifting book. See what you think. It's kind of for beginners, but there's some really detailed insights about the Olympic lifts. I'm real proud of the concept called bow and arrow. I really think it really helps. If someone's taking it serious, helps them a lot. The way I teach the Romanian deadlift really, I think, is the best way to teach it. There's just some stuff in there I think you'll like. The weightlifting books, I think, 97 pages. I don't know. Help yourself, everybody.
Well, I think that about does it. Dan, thank you for the time.
Oh, thank you. And just if you can let me know where to find this interview, I'd like to plug it up on my website, too, so people can find it there, too, all right?
Absolutely. Appreciate the time, and take care.
You bet. All right. Talk to you soon.